bought the graveyard up here?
Yes, ma'am.
But was it sold to the city?
It wasn't sold to the city, it was conveyed under the terms of the Claims Act 14C3 as a part of the reconveyance of lands to the municipality. And now, the city has been approached by the Unalaska Corporation about conveying that land back, which, I think from everything I've heard, everybody's in agreement.
Belonged to the church and it belonged to the people, and they never sold church property before?
No, it wasn't sold, it was, this was before I got here. This, the agreement was signed in January of 1979.
What have the relations been between the city and the Unalaska Corporation? Have they been good?
Well, I can only speak to that question from August of '83, when I got here. I would say in the 14 months that I've been associated with the city and associated with the corporation, that the two get along quite well. Previous to being here, I was up in the Bristol Bay Borough area at NACNAC, and the relationship between the borough government and the Bristol Bay Native Corporation was quite a bit different from here, quite a bit more hostile. But I think the two entities here are trying to work together, and I think it's been a real good relationship so far. But that is my opinion.
What's your official job with the city?
My title is the Director of Planning.
The city and the corporation and I think BLM are involved in some litigation with respect to Haystack?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you tell Judge Berger a little bit about that?
When Mr. George Gustafson was the town site trustee with BLM, and it was in the late 70s, a portion of United States Survey 4988 was deeded over to the city from the federal government. And the city held a land auction, and several parcels of ground were sold. After that time, and probably after the Lignagic suit was begun, the Unalaska Native Corporation did select Haystack as a part of their village withdrawal selections. And it is now in litigation as to who actually does have claim to the land, whether the Unalaska Corporation does have a valid claim to the land, or whether the city, as the land was conveyed to them, they felt under the complete authority of Department of the Interior, does have a valid claim to the land. And here again, the city and the corporation are trying to resolve it. And it's hard to say, because the courts are trying to, I believe, would like to keep all the suits around the state that are similar together and settle them at one time, whereas many of the communities that are involved in this type would possibly like to settle it on an individual basis. So it's difficult to say when it would be resolved. Although, not having anybody here from the Unalaska Corporation, I can only speak for myself and partially the city, that we would like to see it resolved as soon as possible.
The city has also considered annexing the whole island?
Yes, the city has filed a petition with the local boundary commission, and this went out last weekend, first to the Alaska Department of Community Regional Affairs for review. Mr. Sanders at Community Regional Affairs is the liaison person to the local boundary commission. And what the petition asks for is the inclusion of the remainder of Unalaska Island, Sedanka Island, Hog Island, and Amaknak Island, and a distance 3 miles seaward to be incorporated into the city of Unalaska. Now, the various Native corporations are, for the most part, I believe, well, I can't say informed on it, but do know the city's intentions and have voiced some opposition. But there hasn't been a public hearing on it yet. We're waiting first to see how this initial presentation of the petition and the annexation brief will be received. And then, of course, the Boundary Commission, once everything is in order, will schedule the public hearings.
Why is the city interested in doing that?
I think a lot of it is involved in having a voice in the planning of the land use. And I would say that's the biggest factor right there is, you know, having a voice in the land use. We are the only municipality on the island, and certainly those areas in close proximity, would have the ability to provide them with services. Annexation is not directed specifically at increasing the city's tax base. Of course, that is always a byproduct of when land is included in an area that does have real and personal property taxes or other associated taxes, you are going to pick up increased tax base. But I think it's more planning involved, development and management, than in a monetary sense.
What lands would be involved in any kind of taxation, or what kind of taxes would apply?
Well, that's difficult to answer, because we have to go back to the Claims Act and find out what lands are eligible for taxation. It's my understanding now that any Native allotment that has been conveyed is neither taxable nor falls under the jurisdiction of whatever governmental entity it lies in, which is difficult for a lot of people to deal with, especially in the populated areas, because those people receive the services, like fire protection and other things, but yet they do not monetarily support those services. And also, in the larger, where you have larger parcels of ground, say the individual with the Native allotment may, according to BIA, plat their land without having to come before a jurisdictional body and say, this is what we're going to do with it. Whereas the person that owns his land, say fee simple or some other way, must go through all the legal things, preliminary plat review, and on and on and on. And so that, until that is resolved, and when these lands, if they are ever going to be taxable, or if they're ever going to fall under the political jurisdictions, you really can't answer for the rest of the island. And hopefully that's a question that's going to be discussed more fully as this annexation proposal is proceeded upon.
Can you tell me on what grounds the corporations, the Native corporations, oppose the annexation, as far as you can tell?
I think that they're looking at the city wants control over their lands. The letters that the city has received haven't itemized their fears or concerns. And we're hoping now, at least I'm hoping, that in their answering briefs or at the public testimonies, that specific points of concern will come out. But I think a lot of it is that these lands have come back to their jurisdiction under the Claims Act, and they want to be the entity that controls the development rather than having them under the jurisdiction of a city.
How long has Unalaska been a city?
1942 was incorporated.
Yeah, it went from a little Aleut village to first-class city. Was that right?
Yes, sir.
No, I mean, how did they manage that?
Well, the population of the city must have petitioned for
its
status.
Oh, yeah, they did. They did.
And I saw the signatures. The people in the signatures were from the outlying villages.
Yeah.
Well, whatever it was in there was even construction workers, that were here just to But anyhow, they got the signatures, and I didn't sign it because I wasn't here. I was already running the boat for the Army outpost tender at the time. Then, let's say I was out for about a week that time, and I come in here, and I was told that you're a first-class city now. I thought they started with third class or whatever. What is it?
Well, there are a variety of classifications within the state of Alaska.
Incorporated city, do they start to third class?
There are third class cities in the state.
I know we were first class city before Kodiak was, 42. And that just happened overnight.
Yes, could we just take it on the mic, sir?
My name is Michael Aronson. I run the local weekly, the Aleutian Eagle, but I've only been in Dutch Harbor for 2 months, and this is all new to me. But I have a question, actually. The city manager just escaped, the planner just escaped this instant. I understand that Mackinac Island was turned over by the Navy to other...
Maybe you could repeat.
Oh, there you are, Ernie. If the Navy turned over a Mackinac Island or a Mackinac Island to the Unalashka Corporation, how did the Navy acquire it, or did they simply take it?
I can't respond to that question. I don't have a strong historical background in the area as to how...
Well, I'll give you maybe...
I think that Mr. Swanson probably could react to that better, as he pointed out when he was speaking earlier about the historical development of the area. He did state that until the late 1930s, no one here did own land. And so, possibly since he was here then, and I was not even a gleam, he's the one to respond to it.
What about that island?
Yeah, the Navy gave it to the Unalaska Corporation. Yeah.
But this gentleman is saying, how did the Navy get it in the first place?
They just took it.
Well, there's your answer.
Well, first, when the military came in here, the Army, they were not in the village at all. They were just on the Mackinac Island at Margaret Bay. Well, all that is Army, was Army originally. All them two-story barracks over at Margaret Bay, that was Army. Then when the Japs after the Japs bombed here, they spread out. That's when they moved up the valley here and all over the different places. They weren't going to do it at all, but after Japs bombed here, then they decided, well, there was, there was about 45 GIs killed that morning in Margaret Bay. The Japs bombed, dropped a bomb right on their barracks. They had just come in from wherever they were. Then the Army had their office right against the hill there in Margaret Bay, that side the road. And that's where they had all their papers work. That was hit too, destroyed all the papers and everything. So finally, of course, I was getting paid to run the outpost tender, but I never got no money for 2 or 3 months. And finally, I got notice that I could go and see the paymaster up on Alaska Valley. So I went up there and I hunted half a day for him, and I finally found him in a tent way up the side hill towards Ski Bowl.
What about the North American Commercial Company area? Was that held by civilians when the military came in?
Well, the AC company had it.
That
did they keep it while the military was here?
No, the AC company put oil tanks in there in the late 20s. right where that big Navy building is now, that big barracks. That's where they had their oil tanks. When the Coast Guard built some new Coast Guard ships that burned oil instead of coal. So they put in the oil tanks there.
I wonder, there's...
The Navy then took over the whole island. Of course, the Navy already had a radio station there. I don't know when they built it, back in 1918, I think, or somewhere in there. That's where the two towers are now.
Yeah. There's a... I wondered if you would, the man, Walter, if you'd like to say something. You were dropped in earlier to say you'd like to participate, and I was interested in hearing from you. Just take that stool, if you like, and make yourself comfortable. And okay.
Actually, I would like to state I'm not from here originally. I've been here 5 years. I'm from Kinnick area and enrolled in a village corporation up there. And I guess this is really my only opportunity to comment. I think since the Lands Claim Act deals mainly with land ownership, that I'll just comment on that point of it.
Yeah, please do.
What I know about my people were that they were kind of nomadic, and they lived not just in one spot, but they lived in a lot of places, and wherever the land was that could support them is where they stayed. And it changed a lot, and they moved a lot, and of course they didn't have any title to the land, and I suppose that's what the land claims was all about. And when they enacted the Lands Claim Act, they gave the ownership to a business company instead of to the people. And this business company had to follow state and federal laws. It actually prohibited, I think, a lot of the people from using the land the way they used to use it before the act. Now, again, this is in my area, and a lot of camps.
You're on Cook Inlet.
Yes, Cook Inlet area, South Central. Yeah, around Iqaluit too. Yeah.
And then down Kinnick Road or Kinnick Village.
Yeah, well, the areas, all the Kinnick Arm area was used all the way to Fire Island, Little Susitna.
The town of Anchorage, essentially, now all the way to.
Yeah.
Athabascan.
Yes, I'm Athabascan. My grandfather was born in Warrensoff, where the Anchorage Airport is now, when there was a village there. It was a fish camp village, and he lived there throughout the summer and harvested his fish near there in Chester Creek. And my grandmother's fish camp when she was a girl was in Ship Creek, where the railroad station is now. But they moved to Kinnick in the winter time for their trapping and hunting.
What are you doing, Kinnick Arm?
Huh?
What are you doing, Kinnick Arm?
Well, I guess they lived there.
Well, let me ask you about the corporate setup. That's what you were talking about. You said that Congress gave the land. Using the word give in the sense that they guaranteed their title under the act. You say that they turned over the land to business corporations instead of giving it to the native people themselves. What do you think they ought to have done? Let me put it that way.
Well,
if they didn't turn it over to business corporations, what should they have done? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I suppose I had some thought was to not put it into a corporation, but to give it to the groups of people and let them decide how they were going to use it and maybe have them submit a plan for it, or I don't know. I just realize that the way it is now, it's unfortunate, but you can be sued if you trespass on your own land, because there's a corporation and a board of directors that has to protect this corporation for all the shareholders, and to go and to try to use the land is you know, maybe as you had in the past, would result in your trespassing on a private property, although indirectly you owned it because you owned the company. Maybe I don't know how you would. I guess I haven't thought of a solution to the problem so much as the problem itself.
Well, any other thoughts on the problem? What about the fact that chairs were only received by those people living in 1971? Any views about that?
I believe that, you know, that I have a daughter, and
how old is she?
She's about 2 years old, not quite 2 years old, and I have another one on the way, and I'd like them to be able to use the land also, as I had been able to, and I guess I still am able to, and, you know, you need a place to live. Right now, I haven't even a place to live, except for under my in-laws' roof or under my folks' roof, but it can only support so many people, and sometime it doesn't seem right to have to pay your company or something like that to live on the land. It was never that way. Yeah, I believe if stock has to be, and it's the only way to be part of the land, that, you know, that the children should be part of the land too. The ones born after 71.
Yeah, well, you put that very well.
At one time, you were president or executive director of the Unalaska Aleut Development Corporation, right?
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about that? There isn't anyone here from your position now, I think.
Could you repeat that, Mary, for the microphone?
I was just saying that at one time, I believe Walter was the executive director of the Unalaska Aleut Development Corporation, and I wondered if he would talk about that group a little bit.
Yeah. Tell me if that's a business corporation or not to start with.
Well, it's a non-profit corporation under state law, which just means it can't pay dividends or benefit its directors in any way. That's about the only separation there is. I guess it doesn't have stock.
Nobody can sell their shares in it.
No, I don't. Really, I have to be real honest with you. I'm not that familiar with it. I suppose I was the most qualified for the situation at the time. I'm no longer there.
Yes, sir. Let Walter continue, though.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You were going to tell us a little bit about the organization, what it was doing.
It was created in about 1970, I believe, to kind of organize the native people in this area to become involved with the Lands Claim Act. It was called the Unalaska Aleut League. It was a branch of the Aleutian, of the Aleut League, I guess, for the whole Aleutian area, and it was for this village, Unalaska. And for the first 5 years, it was really everything for here, and then it created the Unalaska Aleut Development Corporation. And the Unalaska Corporation, both a profit and non-profit corporations now. I think because After this point, the Unalaska Aleut Development Corporation basically was just a nonprofit village corporation without much purpose once it created the Unalaska Corporation, and all of the activities and took place within the Unalaska Corporation. So since it dealt with the land and the money of ANCSA, and the UADC, which is Unalaska Aleut Development Corporation, kind of faltered a little bit, I would say, and maybe still is, I don't know. I came around not really understanding too much about corporations, and was employed to manage it, pay taxes, employ and operate BIA tribal grants. Just became a part of a paper operation without a purpose. But we did do several activities in around town. I guess we were somewhat useful in some ways. I probably underscore it a lot.
Pardon?
I probably underscore it a lot more than it. It probably was very useful in some things that I don't realize. I just say this because I felt not so useful there. But, yeah. I also served on the board of my village profit corporation, and it was very difficult to transact business in a state business corporate way, whereas our village corporation has 28 shareholders, we're all family, and it was very hard to tell your uncle that he's out of order when that's not the way they did business, you know. And to tell the grandfather that you don't know what you're talking about because you have to make a motion, or you're not, you know, or you mean federal government, not state, or something like this. But I don't know what the solution is either. I think it's be interesting to find out what comes out of all this. Huh?
Yeah.
What is your village corporation doing? Is it doing anything? I mean, engaging in any kind of business?
Well, we have a consultant who basically runs it and speaks on its behalf. And it's not really run by people. The village shareholders don't know what's going on. And it's being run by a consultant who's not native, but who has business experience, and he's also a consultant or a manager for another subsidiary of a regional corporation, and they joint venture and are doing the Susitna hydroelectric feasibility camp project, since that project landed on our land somehow. And no, we just continually spend about $50,000 a year to operate and have no income really to speak of. And we sell land to operate.
Did you say
land? Yeah, well, that's because in my area the people aren't too, I don't know, they don't know how to run a profit corporation too well.
Did they consider dissolving the corporation?
Yes, I suppose it has been considered. I don't think they realize how. Also, another village nearby us would like us to merge with them, but we don't think that's a good idea. Just acre for acre, we would lose in the long run. Yeah.
Just could I just go back a bit? You said you'd been here 5 years, and you used to be executive director of the nonprofit, the local native nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
You said it did a couple of things that you thought were quite good. What were they?
Well, one thing was we had several social activities that people attended and enjoyed. And we also operated a few grants where we, in one case, restored a historic building here which is a Russian Orthodox building. And another grant was a BIA Native Education grant for Indian students in school, or Aleut students, or any Native American Native students in school. There was a certain amount of funding per student, and there was a committee, a Native Education Committee, who decided how this money was to be spent, and we did Native programs here, education programs, that were pretty good, I think. And also, I suppose, we brought federal money into the community, in a way, through BIA. I think we became so engrossed, though, with BIA that we forgot about the fact that, you know, we should be, I don't know, a tribal council or something. This is what BIA called us. And
how did you come here, Walter?
Oh, just by chance. I just traveled here one year. And yeah, really, I was kind of headed for Sandpoint, and I thought I would come here first.
And how do you make your living?
Right now I'm working carpentry a little bit. I fish in the summer for halibut, which isn't very much, but it's a little something. And I just live really cheap. Yeah. Well, I stay in a Quonset hut. I could go on, but no.
Well, thanks very much. I hope you come back this evening. We'll still be here this evening if you're free. I'm glad you did come.
All right.
There's a couple of ladies over on this side of the room, and maybe we might invite them to say a word.
Mr. Ermoloff, want to say something first?
Yeah.
Did you want to say something
first? No, Mr.
Teleno.
I represent Nikolsky, Nikolsky Corporation, things like that. We do our things just systematically as they tell us to do it, according to the law. And other than that, our corporation will do what its own procedures do and things like that. We do our sheep herding and things like that right now. And of course, our corporation is leased, and our lessee hasn't refunded us nothing, but we're still in courts, and the courts of law, what is pursuing still to any date, and we don't know when. So we're still in the courts of law, and we got our attorneys, like Smith and Gruning, and all them, they are attorneys for our law side. I'm sure we will win. And other than that, we're doing their work, what they're supposed to do. That's why I'm here, because through Ermoloff and his father is the president of the Chula Corporation. Of course, my term was up last year. This year it was in May, but I was elected to represent this presentation so I could say what I have to say. I think Bill Ermoloff and Sergey will do a very good job. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions, Mr. Berger.
Could you give us your name?
Yeah, my name is Christy Cook. I was wondering, from the natives that you've talked to all over Alaska, do you have any kind of feeling whether that there's a difference in age of whether the older people express more interest in selling their shares when, if it would become possible when their corporations in 1991, or younger people show interest, or is it, did you see any?
I don't think there's really a significant difference. In fact, very few have said they want to be in a position to sell their shares. And they have been, I suppose, for the most part, younger Native people in urban areas have expressed that particular preference, but really their numbers have been so small that it's a little hard to generalize about them as a group. The overwhelming expression of opinion has been against sale of shares, and that of course reflects a deep-seated belief that Native people in Alaska should hold on to their land. And that group is that says we shouldn't sell is so numerous that it includes really people of all age brackets. The everywhere I go, I try to find to make sure people have the opportunity and don't feel that they cannot express a desire to sell their shares. But not many have said that they want to. You had another question, you said.
I was just wondering when ANCSA was passed by Congress, who was backing it? Who was lobbying for it?
Well, I think that everybody agrees that the land claims were settled when they were because the oil and gas industry and the federal government wanted to build the pipeline from Prudhoe Bay. And so there was a movement that all concerned became a part of to settle the claims. So in that sense, the federal government, the state government, the oil companies, the Native people all supported it. But they all had different ideas about what they were trying to do. And we've heard evidence from representatives of all of these people about what they were trying to do. They congressional subcommittees held hearings in Alaska villages, or at least in Anchorage, I'm sorry, and representatives from the villages came to Anchorage and said, well, we're concerned about keeping our land. We want to be able to continue to have access to fish and game for subsistence. We want to preserve our culture and our way of life. And we want to develop our land where there is economic potential. Oil companies simply wanted to clear away the claims of the Native people so their right-of-way for the pipeline could be established and the pipeline could be built. The state government had the right to make selections of land, that is, state land selections, and their right to do so had been held up by the land claims. So they wanted to settle it so they could make land selections. The Congress, as far as we can tell, many of the leaders in Congress, Senator Henry Jackson, who's now dead, was the principal architect of the act. Senator Jackson wanted the corporation set up because he wanted Native people to become businessmen and to enter the commercial mainstream of America. And we had evidence from one of the aides to Senator Jackson who drafted the act. And he said the idea was social engineering. They would change Native people and make them into people who would be shareholders and investors, and they would become part of the mainstream of American commercial life. Now, if you think about it, Congress was trying to do one thing and the Native people were trying to do another. The institutions that were established to do this, the corporations, have certainly enabled Native people to hang on to the land for the last 13 years. But the unique thing about this act is that under this act that was to guarantee them their land, that was to be the instrument of their settlement of land claims, under that very act they could lose the land after 1991 through sale of shares, takeover bids, taxation. They also, of course, have a body of shareholders that is not necessarily the same as the people living in the community where the land is situated. And so you have this attempt to, you have two sets of people with two different goals, and the corporations were the institution established to serve those goals. Well, it isn't hard to, you're not surprised to learn that they served the goals of Congress perhaps better than they served the goals the Native people had. That's why we're traveling around, is to see how it's worked out, what people think about it, and where they want to go from here. Yes, I've forgotten your name, the publisher. Maybe we can take it. You should be. Well, on our next trip, you will be.
Don't give me any presents. I ran across an interesting piece of information, and I wish I had it more clearly defined, but in my recollection, when the Alaska Statehood Act was being contemplated, it was pointed out that in the United Nations, when this was being organized, the other countries in the United Nations were approached by the United States under the terms of the its prohibition against colonies, because at that time,
the decolonization provisions.
Yes. Yeah. At that time, there was a striking minority of Northern European people, meaning white people, if you will, in Alaska, and the majority of people were Native Alaskans of the different language groups and Native groups. And there was some concern that the United States would be charged as being a colonial power in Alaska rather than owning Alaska. So there was actually at that time, by the government of the United States, by self-admitted action, a large question as to whether they had formal and unchallengeable title to the land and area of Alaska itself, because they went quite out of their way to stifle any objection to their possession of Alaska when they changed it from a territory into a state. So then I must ask, since they have now proceeded after statehood with the Alaska Claims Settlement Act to parcel out various parcels of land to Native Alaskans, whether just as there was some question as to how the Navy got control of a Mackinac Island, well, they took it. They got it from the Army, and then they sold it. Whether the United States also may be similarly challenged as to how they got Alaska. Well, they took it from Russia for a pittance. I'm told that the number of fur seals harvested immediately after the war was more than from the Pribilof Islands, was more than sufficient to pay for the entire Alaska purchase in 1867. Whether it may be presumed that the acquisition of Alaska is without question by the United States, and whether they then have any unquestioned and unchallenged right to parcel out further parcels back to Native Alaskans, to the state of Alaska, and to the federal government itself. I don't believe this has actually been resolved without question, but we are all here, and the Congress and the state are proceeding as though it has. But I don't believe it has. And if you have any further knowledge as to this, what would you call it, the anti-colonial question?
The colonization
or decolonization question, I would be very interested in hearing further about it.
Well, after the Second World War, the United Nations Organization was established and began a policy of seeking to encourage and enforce decolonization. And that has, of course, been something that we've seen occur since the war. 100 new countries have emerged from the old colonial empires. But when Alaska was granted statehood, the matter was not raised in the United Nations, and there has been no resolution advanced in that body that assails the United States on the ground that it has failed to live up to the commitment of all UN members to decolonize subject areas. I think that in fact in 1958 Alaska had a non-native or a white majority. I think the crossover point when native people became a minority occurred quite a few years before that. But the point is this, that in Alaska, the courts recognize the jurisdiction of the federal government and the state government to legislate under the Constitution, and the people of Alaska acknowledge the jurisdiction of those two governments, including the native people. They acknowledge the jurisdiction of those two governments, and the question whether Alaska should have been decolonized in 1958 by giving it a choice, that is, by saying, do you want to be an independent country? Do you want to be a state of the Union? Do you want to continue as a territory? Is not something that anyone believes can be raised now. I can tell you that in my travels around the state at these meetings, I've had some native people raise that very question.